Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats, health and wellness advice for women over 40 and beyond with Amanda Thebe. This is a show full of hot topics specifically for hot women. Amanda Thebe is a force of nature for women who are experiencing menopause hell and want to start feeling healthy and fit in their 40s and beyond. Through her very frank articles, podcasts, and hilarious social media presence, she's here to help you with informative advice while making you laugh like a 20-year-old throughout. Her raging fans have called her an unstoppable inspiration, resilient bitch, and one woman called her the over 40 guru to watch in 2017. Please visit us at fitandchips.com. And now, here's your host, Amanda Thebe.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Fit and Chips Chats with me, your host, Amanda Thebe. This week, I'm super excited to have my good friend, Ali McCall, on the show. We're going to be speaking about some strength-based cognitive behavioral therapy, how to develop a personal model of resiliency through a seven-step process by setting small, achievable goals to generate big, positive changes. Welcome to the show, Ali.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So Ali is Ali McCall. She's been passionate about mental health and wellness for decades. She actually is a friend of mine and I was her trainer for a while, but now we've just like joined cohorts to just work on all of this together. Yeah. She's currently pursuing her master's in counseling psychology, and she also has a diploma in social service work. She works from a strength-based, solution-oriented, positive psychology perspective. That wasn't easy to say, Jesus. It's early in the morning for this. But Ali is particularly interested in self-compassion, cognitive behavioral therapy, mindfulness meditation, and effective communication. And from her own experience, she really believes that these big changes come from super small choices. So Ali, I'm just going to hand it over to you. And I'd just like you to try and explain to everybody a little bit about cognitive behavioral therapy, about this personal model of resiliency and how this impacts people going through this perimenopause phase, if you would.
Sure, great. So cognitive behavioral therapy was originally developed by a psychologist by the name of Aaron Beck. And it's basically, it's a system of setting small goals for yourself in order to bring about big positive changes in your life. And some of how you go about doing that is also becoming aware of some of your own thoughts that are popping into your head, like what are referred to as automatic negative thoughts. And we all have these thoughts, you know, thoughts where we're just kind of beating ourselves up and maybe, you know, saying we're not good enough, we're not smart enough. And I think in particular during, you know, a time of change, of perimenopause and menopause, it's very easy to start to feel like, oh, I'm not as strong as I was, or oh, my hormones are changing, and oh, I'm, you know, being this raging bitch because of my hormones and I'm terrible. And, you know, we all have these thoughts. But once you become aware of them, you can start to kind of evaluate whether they're doing you any good. And often they're not. They're just kind of undermining your ability to actually meet your goals. So once you can recognize those automatic negative thoughts, you can start to relate to yourself with a little bit more self-compassion, be a bit more gentle, and you know, you can actually kind of turn around your self-talk and say, you know, I know this is hard, I'm just having a bad day, that's okay, you know, I'm going to sit down and have a nice cup of tea or whatever it is, but you can actually take care of yourself rather than beat yourself up. So,
and this comes under the header of self-care, does it? When we hear about self-care or self-compassion, is this part of that process?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's just part of it is about bringing awareness. So oftentimes cognitive behavioral therapy is also done with mindfulness meditation. Like it fits really well with mindfulness because it really is just about bringing awareness to your thoughts and to your own physical experience as well, but becoming mindful of, you know, your own hunger cues, your mood cues, what's happening, you know, and when you're feeling bad and you're beating yourself up and, you know, maybe you're beating yourself up for eating a muffin or for, you know, having too much wine the night before or whatever it is, rather than beating yourself up, you can stop yourself because you become aware that you've been having these thoughts, right? And you can say, okay, so that's fine. you know, I did that. We all have our moments. We all have our mistakes. I just really wanted that muffin. That's okay. But, you know, I'm going to get back on to moving towards my goals. And I believe in myself and I can do this, you know. And so being able to stop yourself from that cycle of negative thinking and bring it back to caring for yourself really sets you back on path for making positive choices for yourself, right? Instead of...
And when these negative thoughts appear, because they happen to us all the time, everybody experiences them at some time, and we start to sort of retrain ourselves to maybe not have these negative thoughts, does that stick? Is it like glue? Is this something that we can retrain ourselves to do and then we can just run with it and take it with us? Or is it something we've always got to be aware of?
Well, I think, you know, it can stick, especially with resiliency. That's part of this whole idea of creating a model of a personal model of resilience, because it's resilience that allows you to kind of stick with this self-compassion. And a big thing with self-compassion is that it's also, it's different than self-esteem, because with self-esteem, you're saying, I'm better than that person, or when I do this, then I'm a good person. But with self-compassion, it's also, it's kind of like a non-evaluative, like there's no judgment. You're just accepting yourself as you are in this moment without any, you know, you don't, it doesn't matter what you do. You can just accept yourself. And then from there, you can move forward and get back on track. It's a much more effective way of resetting yourself.
This is great. So how about we use this platform today to talk through the 7-step process? I mean, let's bear in mind, Ali, that this is a 30-minute show and we really can't go as deep into this as we really want to. But yes, if we give an outline to this, it would be great if maybe you can come back on later and we'll discuss each of the areas in more depth. But if we can go through the 7 steps, hopefully somebody who's listening can just relate to an area and think, you know, this is exactly what I need in my life right now. So I'm going to let you lead this.
These 7 steps, these are nothing that I've come up with. They were developed by a couple of psychologists for the Center of Cognitive Therapy, Christine Podesky and Kathleen Mooney. And Christine Podesky, along with the founder of CBT, Aaron Beck, has a really excellent book called Mind Over Mood, Change How You Feel by Changing the Way You Think, which is, you know, anyone can get. So just so no one thinks I'm trying to take credit for any of this.
Yeah, and I'll make sure that link is available to people.
I'll send you the links, yeah. So basically, Podesky and Mooney have identified 7 areas that are correlated with what's called resilience. And resilience is just the ability to bounce back. It's the ability to kind of, you know, get back on track, to cope with adversity. So the 7 areas that they've identified are, 1 is good health and an easy temperament. So, you know, if you are going to be developing a personal model of resilience, you go through these 7 areas. 1, all right, so what's good about my health? You know, do I have an easy temperament? Do I have strong legs? Do I have, you know, good, whatever, you know, maybe you don't have diabetes, you don't have arthritis, maybe you do, you know, but you go through and look at these things. And then 2 would be good relationships. So what relationships do you have in your life that will help you to meet your goals, and what, you know, your friends, your family, who do you trust? Who's in your circle of friends?
So this is where we often hear people talking about in the fitness world about aligning yourself with people that support and you know, want you to meet your nutritional goals. Mm-hmm. But then we often hear about the other thing about like stepping away from people that are like the saboteurs. I mean, is that what this is all about as well?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's about, you know, again, you're looking to kind of take an inventory of, you know, what's here for you that's going to help you in achieving whatever goals it is that you have. So for sure, the relationships, the friends that are going to want to go, you know, on a Saturday morning to a fitness class with you, or who would rather go to a restaurant where you can order nice salads, maybe rather than a burger and fries, you know, those are the people who are within your personal model of resilience who, you know, maybe will support achieving those types of goals.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Yeah, so that's great.
And then just, your kids, you know, the people who you're doing this for, whoever it is that inspires you to just, you know.
And your partners too. Your partners in life as well, yeah.
Absolutely. So that's the second area where you kind of look. And then the third area is interpersonal competence. So this means like what interpersonal skills do you have? And a big one here is knowing when to ask for help. Knowing like interpersonal.
Hold, just stop it right there. You want us to ask for help. Absolutely. You're talking to a group of 40 plus year old women that have never asked for any help in their life, Ali. You know that, right?
I know. It's true. But you've got it. You know, there's another woman as well who I love, and I'm sure some people may have heard of her, is Brené Brown, but she talks about the power of vulnerability. And it is very important that we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, because that's where human connection actually often happens.
It is,
you know, in that area where we say, oh my God, I had a huge fight with my kid this morning, and someone can say, me too, and I'm feeling so guilty, me too, you know. And that's where, when you say, I need some advice, or, you know, you turn to your partner and say, I can't pick up both kids at the same time in two different places at once. I need you to pitch in, you know, those kinds of things.
And I hear you as well. And you know, what's been really interesting for me is, you know, when I lived in Toronto and I just had my first kid and then I had my second kid, I was in Toronto without any family at all. And so I used to, and other people were getting nannies, and I was like, no, I'm going to do this on my own. I can do this on my own. And it was exhausting because I refused to ask for help. I mean, I did occasionally, but mostly I just, you know, did it because I didn't want anybody, I didn't want to think that I wasn't capable. And I think that that's one of the big problems with women is we want to feel capable. And then the idea of us not being able to do that makes us feel like we're failing. And it's time to just lose that mentality, because I know for me personally, going through the issues I've had with menopause, until I actually started talking about it openly and admitting that, you know, I had something that I wasn't coping with well and I needed people to help me. Until that happened, I really did struggle. And then the minute that I opened up, oh my goodness, life became so much more bearable.
I've
aligned with this for sure, but it was really difficult.
Absolutely. Well, because I think once you reach out, you realize just how much we all have in common, how much we're all struggling, how much of a myth the perfect life is. Nobody's living a perfect life. We're all struggling. We're all flawed. We're all just doing our best. And when you suddenly reach out to people and connect on that level, it's far more meaningful, I think. And also you allow the people around you to love you and care for you. And that's important for your relationships, right?
And they'll see you as being authentic as well. And that's huge, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's great.
So that's number three. So look at your interpersonal competence and evaluate that. Number four is cognitive competence. So this is a pretty easy one. I think we all, you know, hopefully can say, yes, you know, I can read, I can plan, I can be effective. And as simple as that sounds, these really are privileges. Like the fact that any of us could even access healthy food and as much clean water as we want to drink and know where to find it and how to get it and to put together a plan for ourselves, write a grocery list and go to the store and do these things. Like just recognizing that you have this competence is actually as simple as it seems. There's also a real gratitude piece, at least for me, when I evaluate those things.
So how does that look in an everyday life? So I understand what you're saying there, but can you just sort of like just give an example of what that would be? Because I'm like looking at that thinking, you know, some days I haven't got the ability to plan or even do anything. And I certainly don't feel privileged when I'm like crawling around the bedroom floor feeling terrible. But I'm still, I know that's me just being in a extremist there, but I mean the fact is I am privileged and I shouldn't ever take that for granted. But yeah, can you just give an example of that?
So, I mean, I think part of that is like a good strategy when you're not feeling very cognitively competent is to remember a time when you were, you know, I mean, there's so many times in your life where you probably have, pulled off all sorts of great things. And I mean, you've built a business, you know, you've helped countless people with their fitness. You're a highly competent person, you know, a lot of the time. And so for times where if you were struggling, you just remember, oh, look at all these things I've done and that I've achieved and, you know, that this did take this ability. And I think despite everything and despite how I feel right now in this moment, which may be not very competent, you know, and just the ability to say, yes, I can execute this. I can do this. I have the ability to do this, you know, is to whatever. So maybe it's even just, you need to get a grocery delivery service. Maybe, you know, you can get a healthy meal delivery service. Maybe you can do all your grocery shopping on Sunday, whatever it is for people who are struggling to figure out that plan. You know, the fact is that we're capable of making that plan. And that's what's important.
And it's a piece of the puzzle, right? Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Okay, number five.
So number five is emotional competence, which maybe we don't always have.
Do we have to talk about this? Okay.
Yes. So emotional competence. I mean, again, this is where you're looking at things that like ways in which you have demonstrated emotional competency throughout your life. All of the things that we've, you know, been through and made it out alive, including parenting small children and, you know, those kinds of things take a tremendous amount of emotional competence. And then also things like self-regulation fall under this category, which some days we may not feel like we're very good at self-regulating, but other days we are. Like a lot of other days we do all the things we need to do on our to-do list, you know, and that requires a significant level of competence actually to do that. And then other things too, like creativity and sense of humor. Like if you have a good sense of humor, you're a creative person, like you can figure this out, you know, whatever the goals are. Like you've got this on some level. We all have, you know, our emotional competencies.
And then also I think that it's also being proud of your, does that come under being proud of your achievements that you said you were emotionally competent through your, like the bringing your children up, and it should be something you should look back at with a sense of pride.
Totally. Exactly. And I think again, if people are struggling, you know, to find a time where they were, you know, emotionally competent or they're not feeling particularly emotional competent, like you said, it's about calling to mind those times where you were. And you know, and I think this whole personal model of resilience, you have to approach with generosity towards yourself, you know. So you got to dig deep and find that love for yourself.
Oh my God, I know sometimes. You know, though, I mean, I think this is the emotional competence thing is maybe something that will relate well to the listeners here, because it's really our emotions that are all over the board at the moment. I mean, we wake up some days full of compassion and empathy for everything and everyone around us, and then we can snap, you know, and then the guilt that comes with that and the shame that also is associated with it.
Absolutely.
I think that it's really good to just realize that, you know, it's okay. It's not okay that you've maybe snapped, but I mean, move on and be compassionate here with yourself. It didn't come from a place of harm. It didn't come from a place of harm. Yeah. And I think a lot of women will probably relate to this.
Yeah. And I mean, I think forgiveness is a big emotional competency. So like your ability to forgive yourself and move on, and then also the ability to forgive other people around you who may have ticked you off this morning. You know, you've got to be able to let these things go and say, okay, well, I'm a good person. That's all right. I didn't mean to yell, but you know, I just got mad. Or, you know, you might say to your kid, I know you didn't mean to take me for granted, but you know, you did and I forgive you. You know, like it's just that ability to kind of move on.
I have to say that that's something I've been really trying to do, because one of the areas personally, I just don't want this to be about me, but it is right now. So no, but one of the areas is if my stress levels are a little bit elevated, and it usually is dependent on where I am in my cycle or just the phase that I'm going through, then I can, you know, if I lose my cool with my oldest son, it's always with him. If I don't let that go, if I don't like either apologize to him or just pull back and just say I was out of line, or, you know, I really didn't mean that. It didn't come from a place of harm. Like, I really love you, and but get your shit together. Come on, we're late. But if I don't let that go, then the health impacts that it has on me are huge. Like, that cortisol level rises out of the roof, and that makes me feel sick. It makes me get a migraine, and so the impactful things that happen because of not being able to manage the emotional component can be massive during this phase, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's, again, that's where, you know, this personal model of resilience, it protects you from these automatic thoughts that pop into your head. Because again, if you have had a fight with someone that morning, you lost it on one of your kids or whatever it is, you could just be constantly all day, these little nagging thoughts, I'm a bad mom, I'm not patient, I'm not, you know, I never thought I would be, you know, these things that pop in automatically with, when you've got this list to fall back on to say, okay, but I know that I am a good person, and I know that I love my kids, and I know that I mean well, then you can kind of just, it's a great way of just getting rid of those little negative nagging thoughts that plague you after a stressful encounter with
your kid or a loved one. Yeah. And a way to stop the self-blame
and honestly, from a, you know, because you mentioned the cortisol levels, it's also a way of, you know, when you recognize the thoughts and you've got these tools, you just kind of regulate your brain, and you can calm down those cortisol levels and engage the prefrontal cortex, the part of your brain that actually helps you to regulate, you know. And so that's part of this too, and that's part of the CBT thing too, is just you've got these tools, and you can step back and say, okay, I'm going to distance myself from this. I recognize it. I'm going to, you know, go through my lists of strengths, the things I like about myself in my head right now, rather than continuing to beat myself up about this. And in doing that, there's an actual like neurological effect, you know, that happens on your whole fight or flight brain system, you know?
Yeah. And it's a way, is this when we're talking a little bit about the sort of like rewiring of the brain? Because I know during menopause, we know it's factual that there is a type of rewiring that happens, and that's why we can have issues with short-term memory, and it's almost like the frontal cortex is going through a whole rebirth. Something's going on. And so I think that working with this model of resiliency is just going to help like the end process, even like through the other end of menopause, just be so much easier.
Well, absolutely. And I think, like, you know, if your hormones are kind of going every which way, and you're trying to figure out your new life, like to have strategies to regulate the systems that you can, is very, like, it's just an effective strategy to say, okay, well, what I can do is this, you know, and it gives you some tools to be able to regain a bit of control over what's happening to you on an emotional and cognitive level, you know, when things are going, seem to be, feel like they're spiraling out of control.
Out of control, yeah. Okay, so let's move on to 6 and 7. We're actually flying through time, but we've still got about 10 minutes left, so let's go through those.
Okay, so number 6 is, you know, just having an opportunity to feel like you're contributing to other people and to the world around you. So, you know, I think most of us probably do have this as parents, and, you know, as women, we do tend to contribute probably more sometimes than we'd like. But nonetheless, it's important to remember that, like, feeling like we have, you know, like that our lives, we're contributing something, that we're doing something that matters, is really important for just for feeling effective, I think, in life.
And also, I think this is really important for a time in our lives when we can often feel unimportant and slightly invisible to people because we're not sure of our place in the world anymore. You were saying, mm-hmm. you know, we often have nostalgia of what we used to be and mm-hmm. where we are right now. And I think knowing that we mm-hmm. do matter, that our place on earth matters to other people, we are contributing in a big way. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it is super important, right? And I think that mm-hmm. I went through a little phase of this, and for sure I'm constantly in a role of reinvention, but it's also part and parcel of this, I think. If we know the impact that we have on other people, often we don't, right? Often we mm-hmm. don't know, but every single person out there impacts somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think, and actually this kind of feeds into number 7, which mm-hmm. is, again, is that you feel like your life has meaning and you have a connection to other people. You know?
Oh my goodness, like I could have written this myself.
Oh, I know.
Your life does have meaning, and I understand
it does.
A confusing time.
Yeah, no. And I mean, this sense of meaning, this sense of purpose, this is like, I mean, there's like, you know, whole schools of psychology just around that alone, because it's so important. It is so important to feel like you have a purpose and that you have, that what you do matters. And I think that that's, you know, when you do, if you're starting to feel like, you know, I don't just like that you're becoming invisible and, you know, that those feelings, I mean, there's gotta be, again, a way to remind yourself, but think about, you know, just today, maybe it was a friendly conversation you had with someone at the grocery store or some change that you gave to a homeless person on the street, or, you know, maybe you called a friend, and I mean, these things do matter. And there's ways to remind yourself of that.
Remind yourself for sure. I actually had a little incident happen this morning. I was driving to the kids' school and I didn't have any coffee in the house, so I went through the drive-through. I have another drive-through story, but this one in particular, I went to pay. I do the drive-through, by the way, because I am now Texan and this is what
That's right.
But I went through the drive-through and I went to pay, and the woman said to me, "Oh, the person in front got you your coffee." And I said, "Really? Why?" And I just was really confused, and she said, "Well, because they wanted to. They wanted to do something nice for somebody." And I went, "That's so nice. Can I pay for the person behind me?" And she said, "Sure." So I did that, and I drove away thinking, "Oh my God, that was such a nice thing to do." So now every single week, once a week, I'm going to pay it forward. And it was just something
brilliant.
And it was a really small thing that somebody did for me, and it totally made my day. I also wish I ordered a breakfast sandwich as well now, but, you know.
Yeah.
That's just one of those things. But so I agree.
When you're feeling low, you could just do something really nice like that for someone else. And it gives you a high, right? It gives you a feeling of happiness and
felt good.
Connection. Yeah. No, I think that's that's actually a great strategy for, you know, if you're having a terrible day, just buy someone else a coffee.
Yeah.
You know, and it gives you that feeling.
That human connection.
So, it is.
So Ali, that was so amazing. So that was a very quick, brief outline of this 7-step process. As you're talking through this, I can see how this can impact people of all ages and lifestyles. It's not really just mm-hmm. for my over 40 crowd. I can relate this to people in my family and to my children, and seeing how this can really, really help them, right? So this is, mm-hmm. is this the purpose of this? It really is for anyone.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, this model, it's for anyone, absolutely. And this model, I mean, they say there's 4 steps. To it, which is, one, you search for the strengths. So those 7 areas, that's step one. You go through those 7 areas, right? And you make a list, an inventory of all the strengths that you have within those areas. And then from there, you build your personal model of resilience. That is your personal model of resilience. And then you can apply it to your life and you just keep practicing it. And it's a way of just, you know, supporting yourself through hard times. It's a way of supporting yourself in continuing to move forward on, you know, caring for yourself. Just, you know, I think that's kind of what, you know, this is about. It's about by coming from a place of looking at your strengths, then you're starting from such a great place.
Yeah. And these lists, when you do this like inventory, it can be as complicated or as easy as you want it to be, right? It doesn't have to be like an essay. It can just be a few small points. Because the idea is, if you're going to look at some areas of your life and you need to make changes, you don't want to make big changes, right? We always want to try and make small changes. And can you just to finish off, talk about the idea of making small changes as opposed to just looking at my life and going, oh, holy shit, everything's crap. I'm going to have to change everything. That's not really the method, is it, to make this work?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. It's not like, you know, like I always think of, people say, oh, well, you know, you choose happiness, but I don't think that you choose happiness. I think you just make small choices every day that build to a happy life, but it's not something that you choose. And even within that happy life, there's still going to be struggle and strife. But if you're resilient, you can cope with that better. So, you know, you might say, okay, I'm going to buy the person behind the line in me a coffee, or I'm going to get up early and, you know, go for a run, or I'm going to eat food that fuels my body well, or fuels my soul well, because I really just want a bowl of pasta tonight, you know, whichever it is. But you're making these choices from a place of self-care and self-love. And over time, these small little choices build to a life that's, you know, mostly happy, I think. That's about it. I mean, I don't think the big things, you can't really choose. Like, we're far too complex as, you know, we're complex systems and we interact within a much larger, you know, complex system of other human beings and our environment and everything else. And we really, the only thing we actually have any control over are these little choices.
Right.
You know, we can't control the big things. And the harder we try to control the big things, I think the more our mental health can suffer as a result.
Yeah, and the chances are we're going to fail, which is basically the final thought on this podcast. Is that don't think big on this. Think small. Think about small, impactful changes, and just don't move the big rocks right now. Just think of small choices and just see if you can recognize and have a place of self-compassion and self-care that's gonna make you feel better about moving through life, right?
Exactly. It's just small steps. And also, I mean, even something else I saw reflected in this, which, you know, your other guest, Allison Schaefer, I remember reading in one of her books, Honey, I Wrecked the Kids, she talks about how children need to feel capable, competent, and connected. And it's the three C's, and this is what she talks about. And I see so much of this reflected in these sort of seven areas of competence, right? It's just, and I think everybody needs to feel that way. We all need to feel like we're capable of things, we're competent, and we're connected. And when those things are in place, we can just cope with so much more adversity, and we can take care of ourselves in the ways that we really want to take care of ourselves.
And the way that we deserve to as well.
The way we deserve to, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Ali, I have to say this was such an insightful conversation. I love the fact that there's a process involved. So thank you so much for coming on the show. I know it's going to get a lot of feedback, this show. It's going to be so helpful. So thanks.
Well, thank you for having me.
And I just want to tell the people who are listening to the show that Ali and I are going to combine our skills and our knowledge for my program that I'm launching in January. So I'm just going to start talking about it now over the next few weeks. But I'm launching a six-month program that's a nutrition and exercise-based program with a psychology background to it as well. And Ali's going to be involved on that. So if any of this resonates with you, Ali's going to be on board with us. So it's going to be like a really holistic view at coping at this through this stage of our lives. Anyway, so thank you for joining the show today.
Thank you.
And if there's any more information you would like, either on myself or Ali, come over to my website at fitandchips.com, and I will be here next week with another guest, and call back then, and we'll see you later. Bye for now.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on the services offered by Amanda, please head over to her website at fitandchips.com. That's FITNCHIPS.com, or her Fit and Chips Facebook page. Leave a comment and she promises to respond to all questions. The views and advice expressed by Amanda Thebe are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always contact your healthcare provider.